Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we're going to be talking about volunteer fire and EMS in the state, emergency medical services in the state. Especially, we want to talk about the challenges facing Iowa's rural areas. Emergency specialists are retiring. There just aren't enough people to replace them. So we want to talk to some of the people who've been working for many years in these fields to see how they are meeting the challenges and how it looks going into the future. We would like to have you join our conversation. Do you work as a volunteer firefighter or in emergency medical service? Tell us about your experience, the main challenges your service is facing. Also, we'll hear reflections on how these services, how these valuable, important, life-saving services get done, how that's changed over the years. Join us, 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, or you can tweet us, tweet Iowa Public Radio. Let's talk with a couple of firefighters, first of all. Marv Trimble is with us. He's past president of the Iowa Firefighters Association, current board member, a battalion chief of the Cedar Rapids Fire Department. Also, he is one of Iowa's 2 directors on the National Volunteer Fire Council. Marv Trimble, welcome to our studio.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Also joining us, Gene Evans. He's first vice president currently of the Iowa Firefighters Association. He's been volunteer firefighting since 1982. Gene Evans, by phone, welcome to you.
Yes. Good afternoon, Ben. Glad to be with you.
In just a moment, Marv, I want to ask you about, well, you go back nearly 40 years in your experience, about how it was nearly 4 decades ago when you joined compared to now. But, Gene, let me turn to you first of all, because a lot of our listeners will not know exactly, be aware, of course, of volunteer fire departments. They are so valuable across our state. But how do they work? We know volunteers have regular paid jobs. How does it work when there is a call? What is the system in place?
Typically, with a volunteer department, typically with a volunteer department in rural Iowa, the members of the department have full-time jobs, are farmers, businessmen, so on and so forth. And when a subscriber calls 911 and requests fire support, then the county dispatch or city dispatch, depending on the municipality, will most likely tone the volunteers out. Everyone carries a radio pager. The tones drop, and everyone responds to the fire station, mans the apparatus, and responds to the scene. That response, depending on the community, can be anywhere from 5 to 7 minutes until the trucks are rolling out the door.
Mm-hmm. And so when you work as a volunteer firefighter, your employer certainly knows you're carrying this pager, this phone, and could need to disappear at a moment's notice?
Exactly. The departments that I'm involved with most closely, when you apply for membership on that department, your employer has to sign off that he's aware that it's going to take some of your time at sometimes inopportune moments during the business day. So the employers are obviously aware. Some will pay the volunteers while they're absent going to a fire. Some do not. It just depends on the particular business or industry that they're working for.
Mm-hmm. And when that call goes out and the need for a volunteer firefighter, how much, I guess, percentage-wise response do you have? I imagine not everybody can leap into action. Is that right?
I can't speak for other communities. In our department here in Osage, we have a wide variety of volunteers. Some are self-employed, some work for the local co-op, some work for a couple of printing plants that we have here in town. And the printing plants are very generous in that if it's a vehicular rescue call, they'll let the employees go on the first alarm. If it's a fire call, then it has to be a second alarm before they're allowed to go. Rightfully so, because some of them are operating machinery that would have to be shut down and mm-hmm. you know, production would stop for a bit. So on any given day, in our community, of the 30 members during the working day, you know, 7 to 3 or 7 to 5, we can probably get about 30% of our volunteers on the first alarm. So 10 out of 30 members, again, you know, on the average during daytime hours. Of course, that increases in the evening when folks aren't working. And we have just a handful of folks that are working second and third shifts. So it balances out, but that's not probably uncommon in the rest of the communities in Iowa. A lot of our smaller communities have become bedroom towns, or the employment is in the next city 15 or 20 miles away. So on first alarms, they have a smaller turnout. And then, you know, the folks that are allowed to leave that are working in a community next door, it takes them whatever the drive time is to respond.
Mm-hmm. And the difference between a first and second alarm, a second alarm is greater urgency, a larger emergency.
Correct. If we if we're dispatched to a structure fire, for example, and we're short on manpower, or in the rural areas, we know that there's going to be an increased demand for water shuttles, then the incident commander will ask for a second page or a second alarm for manpower from our own department, which would free up those folks that are working in those manufacturing facilities. And also, a lot of times initially, even before arrival, we'll ask for mutual aid assistance from our surrounding neighboring departments for either manpower or water. Most of the departments in Iowa have a 28E mutual aid agreement, and you know, hey, if we need you, we'll call and you'll come, and if we need you, or you need us, then we'll respond also. So that works out very well to get additional manpower. And again, water, you know, rural water becomes a math problem with gallons per minute flow, miles traveled, and the amount of tankers that we have to fill our portable tanks.
Mm-hmm. If you just joined us, Gene Evans with us of the Osage Fire Department. He's been volunteering as a firefighter since 1982, also currently first vice president of the Iowa Firefighters Association. Let me turn to my other guest so far in this program, Marv Trimble, past president of the Iowa Firefighters Association, based in Garrison, Iowa. Is that right, Marv?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm a volunteer there. I have been since 1981. I got my start.
Okay, let's talk about that, because we want to talk about current problems in a moment, but take us back in time to 1981 when you started. First of all, what drew you into it?
It's funny you ask, because I was invited to a fire meeting. It was more of a social club at that point. It was a social club that once in a while, you know, went to a fire call. Most of the time, they did their best, but it eventually burned down. So we slowly switched gears from being more of a social club that put fires out once in a while to being a fire department that has a social aspect. And it's been about a 180-degree turn, and it took probably 15 years or so for our fire department to realize how important it was to do the training and to do the drills and to respond to fires more aggressively but safely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, social club actually burned down?
When I say it's a social club, I mean, it was a group of guys that got together at meetings. Our fire meeting was more of a social meeting than a business meeting for a fire department.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, we actually did own a bar. We had a liquor license, and next door was the dance hall. So anytime there was a reception at the dance hall, we ran the bar. So technically, it was a social club.
Mm, okay, interesting. Okay, tell us about how things have changed in the nearly 40 years of your experience.
Well, a couple things. First of all, to a certain extent, our fires have changed because building materials have changed, construction methods have changed. People have to be more aware of what's going on around them so they don't get into trouble. Back in the day, some of our older houses built late 1800s, early 1900s, all built with full thickness material. Nowadays, they're using lighter material. It goes up quicker. It's cheaper to build. It's easier to work on for the construction people, but it burns quicker, and it's a real concern for the firefighters.
It means you have less time.
Exactly. And like Gene mentioned earlier, you know, we have response time to the station, then response time from the station to the scene. So many times when we get on scene, the fire's already gone through what we call a flashover mode. So it's already been fully involved. And then it's real tough trying to catch up after that. And here again, referring to what Gene said about needing water, once it's gone to that point, it takes a great deal of water to gain control of that fire and to extinguish it.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the human resources needed here, specifically volunteer firefighting. Marv, how has that changed in your view over time?
Well, years ago, we had different turnout gear that we used, different clothing we wore to protect us into to fires. And back in 1985, we decided to go to, at the time, state-of-the-art bunker pants and coats rather than we used to have what they call three-quarter boots, which were just tall rubber boots that come up like hip boots, and then a coat that went down to almost your knees. Well, that wasn't the best protection, especially if you're crawling around with rubber boots on. You'd burnt your knees pretty good. So we went to this new style, and what we did in Garrison was we had 32 members at the time. So we actually kind of weeded out the members that weren't very active. And so we had to actually reduce the number, but we didn't reduce our response. So we bought new turnout gear, and slowly then we've actually built back up. Our town has probably less than 800 people in our entire district. It's a 48-square-mile district, and we have roughly 40 people between our fire and EMS involved in Garrison. Mm-hmm. So we have a great percentage of the people in our community that are involved in our fire and EMS. And as our numbers went down, there are as many farms as there used to be. There used to be a number of farms on every square mile. Now there's a farm every other, every third, or every fourth mile. Mm-hmm.
Did you have enough volunteers? Would you like to have more? Is it adequate?
What's happened is, just like EMS, fire, our volunteers have gotten to an age where they're ready to step down and let someone else step in. And we have to work hard then to encourage and, I guess, draw in younger people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Gene Evans, to you in the Osage Fire Department there. Give us the picture there in terms of the human side of this, the labor that's needed, the trained force that is needed here. What are you seeing there now?
As far as our department's membership, we have 30 members on our department, and we also have two junior firefighters. We started that program a year ago. The junior firefighter program is to entice high school kids from the ages of 16 to 18 in their junior and senior years to become a junior firefighter. Obviously, they're not allowed to do any of the hazardous firefighting duties, but it gives them a taste of it. And that kind of segues into the intention of luring them in as a full-time volunteer once they graduate. The recruitment and retention, and I'm sure we'll discuss that later, is a big problem in the state of Iowa. On the human side of it, we train once a month. We have a training meeting. The state has mandated a minimum amount of training hours, which is 24 hours in a 12-month period. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, with the duties that we're having placed on our plate, some with unfunded mandates, currently Osage does, obviously, fire suppression. We also do a hydraulic rescue with the jaws of life. We respond to most of the motor vehicle crashes, even if we're not needed for the jaws, and do traffic control. We have to maintain a hazardous materials operations level certification, which requires a base course and then 8 hours of continuing education every year. So the time demands that are placed on volunteers, in addition to your regular meetings and training and additional training sessions with the hazmat and trying to keep up on traffic safety and all that, it really is somewhat of a detriment to recruitment and retention. Again, I know we'll cover that in a bit.
Mm-hmm. But, let's talk about it now, because that is a real crux of a problem right now. How great is the need? How is retention and recruitment compared to years past? Have we met a crisis? How would you describe, would you use the word crisis?
Well, to kind of mirror Marv's comment, back in the day when I first got on the fire department in 1982, every business owner or manager up and down the main street was a member of the fire department. We had a full roster, and I actually had to wait almost a year and a half to get on, you know, for someone to move away or retire. You know, getting volunteers wasn't a problem back in the day. We started to see that taper off and become a problem. I guess I define it as a problem. And then after 2001, with the attacks on America, we saw a tremendous resurgence in volunteerism. And even in the Volunteer Fire Service and EMS, we saw a tremendous spike in willing volunteers. Now, unfortunately, you know, 18 years after the fact, we're starting to see that taper off again. And it, I guess, we're seeing the generation coming on board. Like Marv says, a lot of us that have had years of experience, the life experience, are ready to get out of this business. But we've come into somewhat of the me generation. What's in this for me? Well, you get to go to fires, and you get this really cool hat and a set of insulated coveralls to wear in July, and get up at 2 in the morning and go to a house fire when it's 30 below zero. And, oh, by the way, you get to do this for nothing. And, you know, to entice some of this part of the population that is in the me generation, they're just turning their nose up at it and walking away. Now, there still is volunteerism, but it's not as simple as it used to be to recruit quality volunteers. And I emphasize quality. You know, we have people that, you know, apply for these positions on the fire department that probably have a reasonably good intention, but are not, you know, don't have the ability to pass a decent background check. And, you know, so it's tough.
Marv Trimble, would you agree with Gene Evans' assessment? Would you add anything to that? That the really the character, it seems to indicate a character of the character of young people has changed in regards to their attitudes towards volunteerism.
I think there is a lot to that, and I think it's twofold. One, I've been involved with one of the local organizations in our small town of Garrison that does a lot of volunteer work. And when kids would get in trouble, what would they get sentenced to? It was community service. So it was a penalty. It was a punishment, community service was. And I think a little bit of that kind of carries over to the volunteerism. It says, like, I'll do it if I have to. I think the other side of it is, in my opinion now, we've got a generation of kids who have had every moment of their life scheduled to the point of before school practice. They've got school. They've got after school games. They've got dance. They've got whatever else. They have to make time for, here again, I'm using air quotes, play dates, because they schedule playtime. I mean, they have to do that because every moment is scheduled. So in their minds, I don't think they have any free time.
I understand that because, I mean, I have three adult children now. I think back in my childhood in the 70s growing up that you didn't have the internet. You didn't have a lot of these things. You had the movie theater you could go to occasionally. But you really did have a lot of downtime. And I can see how with a young person with more downtime, they would say, hey, this is something I'm available for most days or at least have more time for than this ultra-scheduled childhood that we've given to our more recent generations, right?
Right. And I term it, we were cage-free children. We basically were told what time to be home for meals, and we left. Now, society has changed.
I'm right with you, Marv. That's where I was, too.
Yeah, society has changed, so you know we all have to be more careful about things.
Yes.
But yeah, that was kind of the way it was. You went out and you made your own fun. Nobody scheduled me any time to go out and play because that's pretty much what I did.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the solutions. We've got about 4 or 5 minutes before we go to break. Then we're going to have some specialists from the area of EMS join us, and you'll stay with us, I hope. Gene, a little bit about what you see as the remedies to these challenges. How do we tackle them? Is legislation the answer?
Well, legislation is the answer if it's in a positive note. We've all heard and experienced perhaps the unfunded mandates. The government says you shall, and by the way, there's no money for that. So the legislation that the Iowa Firefighters Association has been trying to get in is more enticement again. We've for several years now had a $100 tax credit for volunteer firefighters. If you served 12 months service on the volunteer fire department, your chief signs an affidavit and you get a $100 tax credit.
Okay, well, I'm going to say, Gene, that's not much, is it?
No, you know, $100 is $100, but that's not much. The IFA, the Iowa Firefighter Association, has been trying to get legislation through that would allow the volunteer, and this would benefit these younger volunteers that are coming on board, the ability to choose, hey, I'll either take the $100 annual tax credit, or I will put that $100 and whatever else I or my department or my community chooses to contribute into a retirement fund, a length of service awards program. Mm-hmm. And we're having some good reception for that in the legislature. Our problem is getting someone that is willing to administer a very small, in the retirement fund scheme of things, account for a fee that we can afford. So that's something that's coming down the road. But, you know, if you serve 10 or 20 or 30 years, at the end of that 30 years, you would have a nice check that you could go buy your convertible with or whatever you choose to use that money for.
Right.
But again, that's not much. Some fire departments, they pay a minimal, and I mean a minimal amount per call, $7 or $10. And again, you know, it's part of being a volunteer. When you sign on, you're not doing it to get rich, but you know, perhaps if there was funding available, and we understand that funding is tight in today's state budget, but just some way that can even slightly more compensate the volunteers.
Okay. Marv Trimble, we've about a minute before we have to take a short break. Add to that, as you see, what do you think is needed here to improve the services and improve the numbers?
A couple things. One, I think we need to go out, and Gene has already mentioned their junior firefighter program, and I know nationally there's a big push. It's not just the state of Iowa, by the way. This is a national epidemic with volunteerism. To go out and educate young people that, hey, this is something that's good. You can do something good for your community. And Gene already alluded to it. We're not in it for the money, but at least fund your training and fund your travel. There are times that a lot of volunteers, fire departments, EMS, the members go out and they go to some expense to themselves just to become or to keep their certifications up.
And, so it's not guaranteed that the training or the travel for the training is even paid for.
That's true.
It can come out of the individual's pocket.
It can, yes.
Okay. We'll be back in just a moment. Marv Trimble, past president of the Iowa Firefighters Association. Gene Evans, current first vice president of the Iowa Firefighters Association. Both firefighters and both well acquainted with volunteer firefighting in the state. So we're talking about the state of volunteer firefighting, especially in rural communities. But also in just a moment, we'll talk about emergency medical service and what the state of that is. And we'd like to have you join us, especially if you have experience in these areas. 1-866-780-9100, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Ben Kiefer. Back in just a moment.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Glad you're on board. If you were with us in the first half hour, then you know that we're talking about volunteer fire services in the state, also EMS services, medical services, emergency needs in our state, especially in Iowa's rural areas. Turns out that these emergency specialists are retiring. There just aren't enough people to replace them in many cases. So we're talking with firefighters. We have with us Marv Trimble of the Iowa Firefighters Association, a long history of firefighting, over 4 decades, back to the early 1980s. Gene Evans is with us as well. He's currently first vice president of the Iowa Firefighters Association. How we are so reliant on volunteers, and the volunteerism has changed over the years, so this is a challenge for firefighters. Let's also include EMS this half hour. Sandy Hike is with us, a paramedic for the Johnson County Ambulance Services. Sandy, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Sandy is also a EMS coordinator for the West Liberty Ambulance and on the West Branch Fire Department. So we get into an area where EMS and fire is all mixed up because we know, back to you, Marv Trimble, your firefighters have credentials to give medical help as well, don't they, emergency?
Absolutely. On our volunteer department, not all do, but many of them do.
Mm-hmm. Mark Sakin is with us as well. He's the president of the Iowa Emergency Medical Services Association based in Mason City. Mark, thank you for joining us by phone.
Thanks, Ben.
Let me turn to Sandy first of all, and have you give us a sense for those who are really don't have much of an idea, vague idea perhaps, of how it works to be working for the Johnson County Ambulance Service. What are the services you provide? How far flung away from, I guess, your base in Iowa City are you called?
Basically, Johnson County Ambulance covers all of Johnson County, pretty much up to the Iowa River. Area Ambulance covers a very small portion near the Swisher area for us. But basically, we also go into the edge of Cedar County and cover West Branch.
Mm-hmm. And what medical emergencies typically pop up during the day?
You can have a wide range of things. You can have we have a lot of vehicle accidents with Interstate 80 going through our territory and also 218 and 380. So we have a lot of vehicle accidents. And obviously, we have an aging population, so we have medical problems, you know, heart problems, stroke, mm-hmm. diabetes that we deal with on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. So you and your people have to be ready for anything from fairly minor things to life-threatening car accidents, for instance.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Mark Sakin, what's it look like there in Mason City for you? Tell us about your work.
Well, I actually volunteer with the Nora Springs Ambulance Service, which is about 7 miles east of Mason City. And we kind of run the same kind of deal as Sandy. We've got the Avenue of the Saints that passes through our ambulance district, which provides us with plenty of car accidents and such. And we also run across the same medical issues with the aging population in our area. We're just one of two transport services in the entire Floyd County. And we're responsible for the kind of the northwest section of the county. And, you know, we're a very small ambulance service with only six EMTs to cover that area most of the time. And currently we don't have any drivers rostered other than the drivers that we've been able to roster with our three fire departments that we work closely with.
So you have a clear shortage, Mark.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So your drivers, tell me about the teams that go out on your ambulances. You need, what roles do you need filled there?
In the state of Iowa, the minimum response for a transport ambulance is one EMT and a CPR-trained driver.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and you're having trouble filling those rosters.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There are times where our ambulance service has to go out of service because we simply don't have the staffing.
Mm-hmm. So, Mark, what do you see has changed? Did this, I don't know, when you got into this business, but take us back, I imagine decades. Did you always have these problems recruiting?
Well, when I first started, we had, three person crews were not uncommon, and our calendar was pretty much full for the entire month.
What year would that have been about?
I started with Nora Springs in 2010.
Okay, so this is a change that's come about fairly recently, then, you're telling me, Mark.
Yeah, I think maybe within our agency it might be fairly recently, but I think it probably goes back further with some other agencies. I think each agency faces different challenges at different times, but I think it's becoming more and more common because even paid departments are having a tough time attracting candidates to fill those EMS positions.
Mm-hmm. What's behind that, Mark, do you think?
Well, I think Gene and Marv touched on it with the kind of climate of volunteerism with the younger generation. And I don't want to diminish the volunteerism that they do participate in, but there's clearly a different ask of a person to provide EMS or even volunteer fire protection versus, like, you know, serving meals at a community kitchen or planting flowers in your local park for a Saturday afternoon. It's all volunteerism, but it's a huge ask for folks who have to invest a lot in education, continuing education, time away from family for training, time away from family during calls, time away from their jobs to respond to assist their community members. So I think that there, you know, I think that's probably one of the key things on the volunteerism side.
Mm-hmm. But we needed those investments in past times, and people were coming forward to do it. They're just not, it seems, in as great a numbers these days.
Right. And like I believe Marv kind of indicated that, you know, people have busy lives. They've got a lot going on. They're a younger generation that, like he said, were used to being, you know, scheduled and having their days completely filled from sun up to sundown. And I think they kind of continue that with their interests. So it's pretty easy to say, no, I really don't have time to invest in, you know, volunteering in EMS or volunteering in volunteer fire.
Sandy Hike of the Johnson County Ambulance Service is also active in West Branch. How much are volunteers relied on in your area, EMS?
Our volunteer shortage is mainly during the day. The majority of the calls that happen are generally between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m., which is a problem because that's when all of our volunteers head into Iowa City or somewhere else to go to work. So the majority of our shortage has been during the day hours. The guys in West Branch that work in West Branch own their own businesses are generally the ones who respond during the day and have to leave their business. We've also done, since 2004, we've done a lot of recruiting at the high school. I know that Mr. Evans was talking about his junior firefighter program. We call it our cadet program. Basically, we go to the school, and if a student is over 16 years of age and keeps a C grade average and is in good standing with the school, they're allowed to respond with the fire department on fire and medical calls during the day. And again, like Gene talked about, they can't do the active roles that are involved with the firefighting and EMS, but they are excellent resources for us as far as helping us with, I mean, we train them in CPR, we train them in the basic stuff that they can help us with, and they go get equipment for us, and they're a real asset to the fire department because otherwise we wouldn't have people to respond during those days.
Sandy, I think you've got nearly 40 years of experience in the business of emergency services. What about this theme of volunteerism and the change in attitude toward volunteerism? Have you seen that as well?
Yeah, I've seen it, and I think that a lot of it not only is time commitment, but it's also the cost. There is no funding for people to get the training that they need to be able to do the job, to volunteer to do the job. And even at the basic level, we talked about EMT being the basic level for response in an ambulance. That's going to cost you anywhere from $2,000 to $4,000 plus a lot of in-class time, like 128 hours of class time, and then you have to do ride time on an ambulance and work in the hospitals a certain amount of time. And then you go take the national test, and they're not having a fairly significant fail rate on that national test that people aren't able to pass it. So then basically it's wasted money, wasted time, and I think that's a frustration that we're facing in volunteerism.
If you just joined us, we're talking about first responders in firefighting, also in medical services here in state. We have Sandy Hike, Mark Sakin, Gene Evans, and Marv Trimble with us. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Do you work as a volunteer firefighter or with the emergency medical service? What changes have you seen? What want to talk about some remedies also as well this half hour. Let's go to Bruce. He dialed 1-866-780-9100. Bruce, where are you calling from?
Orin, Iowa.
Okay. Welcome to our program, Bruce. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just had. I was wondering. All the schools are starting all these career technical education programs, and there's a big push for students to get certifications and all kinds of things. CPR is a common one. I was just wondering what kind of collaboration could be done between fire departments and EMS with schools to generate a bigger pool of qualified volunteers.
Okay, who wants to tackle that?
I can go ahead and speak to that,
okay.
Ben.
Okay, who is this speaking?
This is Mark Sakin.
Mark, please jump in.
Actually, Bruce brings up a good point, and you know we've identified that as something that we can and tap into this younger generation and try to get a start on recruiting folks right out of high school. As Sandy mentioned, they've got a program in Johnson County for high school students 16 and over. Our local EMS training program at our local community college offers EMT classes at local high schools for folks who want to entertain the idea of becoming an EMT. So we are doing, you know, some positive things to try and recruit younger folks, because like you'd mentioned, there just isn't that number of younger folks to come in and replace the number of people that we've got retiring out.
Mark, talk about an aspect here that I think is essential to talk about, and it's also a difference, I think, between EMS and firefighting. EMS is not considered, quote, an essential service. What is that?
That is correct.
What does that mean?
Iowa Code has provisions in itself to basically mandate that cities, counties, townships have to provide law enforcement protection and fire protection for its citizens. There is no provision in Iowa Code that says any city, township, or county has to provide EMS services to its citizens.
Mm-hmm. Should there be?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that we've kind of identified through our efforts, we've tried organized efforts at the state legislature level for years to try and convince the legislature that EMS should be considered an essential service. And we've not met with much success dealing with the legislature one-on-one.
I'm having trouble thinking of the arguments against considering emergency medical service as a non-essential service. Well, what are the arguments you run into there, Mark?
You know what? Actually, it comes down to money, unfortunately.
Okay.
None of the legislators want to be the ones to go to their constituents and say, hey, we need to spend a boatload of money to support this new, you know, okay. not really new, but
it's desired, know, but we can't afford it. So it has to be, Sandy, is that what you encounter as well?
Yeah, that's basically correct. The people of Iowa don't understand. I think it's that they don't understand that when they call 911, they are not guaranteed an ambulance. There's only 25% of the ambulance services in the state of Iowa that are paid services, that you're guaranteed that an ambulance is going to roll out the door. And 67% of the ambulance services are volunteer, like West Liberty is, where if we have people to staff the ambulance, then we respond in the ambulance. If we can't respond, then they go to the next closest area ambulance. They page them. They may not have somebody to respond, so you keep going out, and there's times that Johns County is going into Cedar County, going into Muscatine County to cover calls because we're a paid service and we have 24-hour coverage.
Marv Trimble, you want to jump in here?
Yeah, our Garrison Department has the first responder group. We are non-transport, so these ambulance services, they can actually bill for services, but you get a non-transport and they can't bill for services. So what we try to do is we try to make sure we replenish our supplies from the ambulance before they leave so they can bill for it. But there's certain things we can't. And just like we're talking earlier, the cost to the, whether it be the service or the student, of getting this EMS training is quite high.
Mm-hmm. Mark Sakin, when we talk about it being not classified as an essential service, does that make a difference in terms of response times and then survival rates in severe accidents?
Well, I think you could extrapolate that. If you don't have, you know, in a lot of times medical emergencies, you know, time is critical. And if you have to wait, you know, 25 to 30 minutes for an ambulance when you you used to have an ambulance service that was only 10 or 15 minutes away, but they had to close down because they weren't able to sustain funding or sustain staffing, so they had to shut their doors, you know, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to kind of bring Gene and Marv back into this discussion, most fire departments do first respond to medical emergencies or traumatic injuries and car accidents and the like. And it puts extra pressure on those small rural departments that have first response capabilities because they're the ones that are burdened with providing first aid and care to those patients while they're waiting for these ambulances that have to come from, you know, who knows where.
Mm-hmm. Let me just ask it this way. When we talk about firefighting or EMS, and we go back 30, 40 years, am I better off now having an emergency, having a fire start regardless of where I am in the state now or 30, 40 years? Have we degraded or improved in terms of response time and service delivered?
Well, I think one thing that the state of Iowa is good at is kind of scrambling to cover their needs. And over the years, that's exactly what we've done to try to maintain a certain level of care that people expect. But I think we're coming to that crisis point where, you know, we're really not going to be able to sustain that for much longer. So we need to take a look at some unique and innovative things to do differently to kind of meet those challenges.
Let's get a couple of quick calls, then I'll go around to you to see what might be those innovative things that are there and need to happen in the future. Let's go to Robert in Council Bluffs. Robert, you have a connection with firefighting, volunteer firefighting?
Hey, Ben. Well, both. I started out as a volunteer fireman, and I've been a fire medic for 30 years in two different departments. One was a county EMS agency, like the lady from Johnson County, which was Sac County, Iowa, and then Council Bluffs Fire Medic for the last 20 years. But there's a few things in Iowa that people never touch on, and that's egos. You know, we have a lot of egos in the fire and EMS service. And Missouri is a great example on the EMS side of not having geographical boundaries when it comes to a department. They have ambulance districts. They also have the ability to tax for that district because they've declared it an essential service, and you've already touched on that. But there's just way, in my opinion, there's way too many transporting ambulances in Iowa. An ambulance is now $180,000, $200,000 to buy, and you have to staff it. And if we had more first responders to deliver the aid in a timely manner and the transporting services were centrally located without having geographical boundaries, would greatly increase Iowa EMS.
Okay, Robert.
And I think you'd see more volunteers doing it.
Okay, Robert in Council Bluffs, thank you very much for that comment. We're running out of time here. Let's very quickly, and really in just a few seconds, if you have something that was left unmentioned, jump in here. Either a response to Robert, Mark, or Sandy, or otherwise heading out of this conversation. Sandy?
I think, Mark, go ahead. That Robert brings up a good point, and it's a valid point. The egos are a problem. The territorial, adversarial aspect of the areas that we serve, that's a problem. And we all as a group need to get beyond that to provide the best service that we can. Mm-hmm. I would disagree with him that we've got too many transport ambulances, though. I don't think that's the case at all.
Sandy, your reaction to Robert or some closing thoughts?
I agree that we need to start stretching our boundaries and bringing our ambulance services together in kind of a regionalization type thing to try to get the calls covered.
Mm-hmm. We have just a few seconds. Marv Trimble, closing words from you.
Okay. Fire used to be a huge ego issue 40 years ago. I've seen that way cut back, and departments are working together much, much better now. The volunteer services and even the career services are working with volunteer services and back and forth. So that, I think, has improved.
Okay. Gene Evans, you've been on the sidelines there for a while. What do you want to get out there before we say goodbye for today?
You talked about the changes in fire protection. Marv mentioned the lightweight building materials. Homes burn geometrically faster now than they did 15, 20, 30 years ago. But then it's kind of a double-edged sword because the technology in the fire service is increasing as technology is throughout the rest of our culture. So the homes burn faster, you have less time to get out, but once the fire departments are on scene, you have more technology to assist you. So
okay. Gene Evans, we'll have to leave it there. Marv Trimble, Gene Evans, Sandy Hike, and Mark Sakin, thank you so much for giving us an overview of the challenges facing EMS and firefighting in Iowa today.
Thanks for the opportunity, Ben.
Tomorrow on the program, it's a Politics Wednesday edition of our program. We'll be joined by Jim McCormick from Iowa State University, Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa. We'll talk about the China trade war, an update there. Of course, the first of the Democratic debates tonight. We'll talk about that as well tomorrow on River to River. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.